Do you know why it's called Tank?
No.
Apparently it's the sound that a bass guitar makes.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
That's annoying. Okay, listeners, welcome to episode 74 of the Picky Bastards podcast, the podcast where three people who spend far too much on records and gigs come together to talk about music to make it look like they have valid reasons to do so. I'm here with Sam. How are we doing, Sam?
Hi, Fran.
You are the one who spends the most on records
and
gigs.
That is very true.
I used to rival you, but I don't since I had a child, so... And Matt as well. I don't know how much you spend anymore, Matt, because you live in New York and you don't tell me
things. Yeah, secret. Well, everything's more expensive here, so.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I think it's all valid. It's all good money spent on things that's not too much.
I mean, I don't really get to listen to my records anymore, and I've bought three in the last 2 weeks, and they've not even come out of the packet yet, so I don't know if it's valid in my case. But anyway, this isn't a counseling session for me. So anyway, the Picky Bastards podcast. If you haven't listened before, each month we pick four recently released albums. We pick a classic album that none of us really know, and then one of us talks about a band or artist we love in the Why I Love section. So this month, the new releases are Grip by Serpent With Feet, Girl With No Face by Ali X, Everything Everything with Mountain Head, and Idols with Tank or Tanguk or whatever you want to call it, but I'm not getting into that. The classic is Otis Blue by Otis Redding, and after 74 episodes, I will be telling you why I love Radiohead in the Why I Love section. So look forward to that, Sam. Okay, so we always kick off with a couple of questions. I'm going to go to Matt first. Matt, what was the most emotive moment on the playlist, and how did that compare to the rest of the album?
So my answer for this is going to be the Otis Redding album, which is it's rare that I get to answer the question with the classic. And so the album Otis Blue. And I feel like when you suggested it, I knew I was going to like it because there's kind of this that era of blues rock soul, which has like a lot of warmth to it. It sounds very classy. And I don't think I was disappointed by that aspect of it. And I guess what I was surprised by was the number of tracks that I knew already. And I think that's what made it very like an emotive listen to me, because it was able to lean into all that kind of nostalgia. It was able to lean into all these kind of this shared musical culture that you get even if you're not actively listening to Otis Redding, or even if you aren't listening to a ton of like old blues rock tracks. They're just in culture everywhere. Every time I've seen a like a rom-com, My Girl comes on or something like that, or there's some montage or there's an advert or something like that. And so it's able to tap into that. And so listening to some of these songs, I felt like very happy and calm and content, even though it was sometimes a little cheesy maybe, or a little smooth. And so it was, I was kind of torn on this album, because it did feel like we often do classics and they feel like they're essential albums for maybe specific like music culture, or they're really essential albums for a genre. And then there's albums like this, which kind of transcend out and become part of wider culture. But so many of the songs are like, say, covers, or maybe other versions are known better, that it feels somewhat like a compilation. And so I think like Otis Redding at the center of this, he's obviously a fantastic songwriter. And I really do appreciate the fact he's managed to kind of make the songs very cohesive into a singular album with his like unique style and the kind of the brass that's all over it as well. But sometimes it can be a little bit disruptive to jump around a little bit. And I think, especially with the Rolling Stones song, that was maybe the most stark jumps were around that towards the end of the album. I really enjoyed listening to this, but it just felt hard to kind of judge this in the context of everything else. And I think it, maybe it's just a little unfair because this is what building an album maybe was in this genre at that time.
Okay. Thank you, Matt. What did you think, Sam?
Yeah, I think I agree with a lot of what Matt's saying. I think like a very boring and obvious comparison to make is to the Aretha Franklin album we did. Because I think they're like a year or two apart, maybe, when they came out originally. But I feel like this feels just as much of like a classic as I felt like that did, in the sense of what Matt was saying, where these are like recordings that are kind of part of history, not just like pop culture, even at the time. Like this seems like a historical album, even though it's from the 60s. Because it's just so ingrained in everything that like is with music. And I really enjoyed listening to it. I think Otis is a joy to hear on all of these tracks. I think he just has so much soul, and he always really goes for it and feels like he's like giving you everything to these songs. And the emotion that he's giving at all times is so infectious. Are these the definitive versions of these songs? I wouldn't say so, but I think he's also consistently brilliant in the way that he's creating his own sound with it, that I don't think it matters, because I feel like he could probably sing anything. I think My Girl and Change Is Gonna Come are probably the highlights for me, but I really enjoyed Rock Me Baby as well. I thought the kind of that kind of bluesy energy that he brings to it is really, really enjoyable to hear. I really, really enjoyed listening to this. I do feel it's a bit unfair to be comparing this to like some of the albums on the playlist, because you kind of go like, I don't think, how many years is that? That's like 60 years ago, isn't it? I don't think people are going to be listening to some of these other albums in 60 years. No. Maybe we're wrong, but that's not to say a bad thing. I'm not saying that that's because anything's like not good. It's just that this is like the fundamentals of music and timeless. Yeah, that's a great example. So like this feels like one of those albums that it's like I should own this. I feel like I should have already had this in my collection, and that I'm now closer to being like an actual music fan for finally listening to it. Like that sort of thing where it's like kind of essential in most obvious way.
Okay. Well, yeah, agreeing with loads of what you're saying, the stuff about it being a compilation and everything, but putting all that aside, for me, I feel like this is the best classic album we've covered. I don't think there's been another time when the classic has been the LP I've been obsessed with for the month, and I have been obsessed with this. I've always assumed I would love Otis Redding, so I don't know why it's taken me quite so long to actually sit and listen to an album. I remember as a kid, I used to make a lot of mixtapes for people, and there would always be Dock of the Bay. That would always be on there. And I partly chose this album when I was thinking, let's finally do an Otis Redding. I picked it because Dock of the Bay. I mean, it was one of the two albums that everyone raved about, but also it didn't have Dock of the Bay on it, and I wanted to listen to an album that didn't have that. But obviously, like Matt said, when it comes to it, I recognised most of these songs as I listened through. Many of them are covers, but I think he just brings so much personality and soul to every moment. I think whether they're here, they're covers or not, he makes the songs his own. And yeah, maybe they're not all the definitive versions, but listen to My Girl and Satisfaction. I mean, I'd rather listen to these versions than any other I've heard. And I think the funny thing is one of the most famous songs here would be Respect, which I imagine a lot of people would think is a cover, but it's not a cover. That is one of his originals that Aretha Franklin covered. And obviously she made it the massive hit it is. And kind of listening to his version, it's interesting to think about, because she obviously turned it into this big feminist song, and maybe his is not, and that might be the one problematic part on this album when it is a little bit dodgy, but it still sounds great. I've Been Loving You Too Long. I think that's a stunning song. I think his voice just sounds incredible on that. But yeah, Matt, you've chosen the right one for your answer to your question, because for the reason I asked that question was because I think the most emotive moment here is a change is going to come. I think so it's originally a civil rights era protest song by Sam Cooke, but again, Otis just put so much of himself into it. I think it's generally hard to hear that song without feeling slightly emotional. I think it's the epitome of what I really hope to find in these classic albums. So yeah, I just think it's a dynamite album. I think it's fun at times, it's emotive, it's soulful. It's kind of really open and inviting, and he's just got an amazing voice. So it was a big success for me. Sounds like we all at least liked it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I think when I was reading about this, it's one of the few albums that made me like, it's rare that I would want to go and read about the album, but I was, especially with A Change Is Going to Come, I was reading that Cooke died shortly before the album was made. And so that probably added to his performance, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Because they work together and stuff.
Yeah, well, a lot of these are Cooke covers. There's a few. There's not just one. At least Cooke had songwriting credits on several of them, whether they were ones that he performed or wrote, I'm not sure. But he was heavily involved. Because I just did a very intense research on Wikipedia. And he was credited with a lot of the songwriting. So there we go. That's, probably does add to the emotion of it. Brilliant. Okay, we start with a classic. That may be the first time ever. Yeah. Okay, Sam, on to the next question. So, Sam, which album felt hardest to connect to?
Yeah, I feel like neither of you will be surprised by my answer to this, but I think you'll be surprised why I've chosen it here. Because I don't think any other album on the playlist challenged me the way that Idol's Tank has this month. Okay. And it's because I've just been wrestling with the prospect that maybe I can like Idols.
Okay.
After all, because I like this album a lot, and I never expected to get an album like this from them that I was genuinely excited to go back to. We've listened to kind of, I don't know, have we done two on the thing?
Yeah, two previous albums on the podcast.
I think I've definitely done one of them. I think when the one that was for the Joy's Active Resistance. Yeah. I've definitely done that one. And like the parts of the band and like his like central performance that I did appreciate is here, but it's kind of without the endless nonsense and shouting that we usually accompany these songs. Like this feels so much more polished in a way. And I think that Grace is the most obvious standout for that. I don't think I've ever enjoyed an Idol song anywhere near as much as I do that song. I think the way that the drum rhythms work on that song is amazing. And the song really like develops around it. And his vocal performance on some of those songs kind of just shows a completely different and new side that I haven't really heard. I don't think I've actually listened to the last few Idols albums, so maybe this has been a steady development since the last ones that I heard. But like songs like Pop, 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 Jungle, they feel just as enjoyable as that. And while like Monolith and A Gospel, they've got like so much emotion, and I just wasn't expecting it. I wasn't expecting this sort of record. The thing is, are Idols like still like an important band who say like important things? Clearly not. Like, I think Dancer is the best example of like, it's of like a banging track, but that's fun, and that's more fun to listen to than say like the important music they may have done before. And I feel like it says a lot that this is what has resonated with me versus the music that I felt like I was kind of forced to like, because I'm supposed to like it, because it's what real music fans like. Because for me, the music just sounds so confident and comfortable for them. But I also fully understand the idea of a band that is all about saying something. Like that was the draw of Idols.
Yeah.
That was the best thing about them. And the thing that I enjoyed the most about those records was that they were saying something. And the fact that they're not anymore, I wonder if everyone else would ever agree with me liking this more. because I do understand that, and I get that they're probably a less important and relevant band for it. But I know that this is my favorite album that I've heard of theirs so far.
Okay, well, yeah. I'm going to jump in because just on that point, I actually think that they could, I don't think they could have kept doing what they were doing with trying to say stuff. And I think they proved that on Ultra Mono. They got in the, stuck in the middle there of, do we keep being this important band with our slogans, or do we try and make some music? And I think they got stuck in the middle. But I don't think they could have kept doing that. I just think before I talk about what I think of this album, I need to sort of maybe give the listeners a bit of context in regards to my journey with this band. So we covered the first two albums on the podcast, as Sam just mentioned, and I became a full-on super fan. I was in Facebook groups, I bought t-shirts, I pre-ordered all the albums, I saw them live quite a few times. I would even generally say that Idols changed my taste in music to a degree. They made me get back into a heavier, punkier side of guitar music after years of not listening to it. So yeah, I loved them. And then they released Ultra Mono and I hated it. I thought there was a lot of terrible songs for one thing, but I also thought that this is where what Sam's talking about became clear. There were songs where they were just saying things for the sake of it, and the slogans were just cheesy and repeated, and it just made them feel fake. And you started to read a lot of rumors about them being dickheads that had been faking it all along, and that album made it easy to believe that. I thought Crawler, that came after, was a better album, but it still didn't stick with me. So I kind of found I wasn't really listening to them at all anymore. Something about them was annoying me. I actually put some of my records up for sale on Discogs. I retired all my t-shirts to the pajama drawer. So yeah, so I fully expected to hate this album and only really wanted to listen to it out of a morbid curiosity when I heard one of them say that one of the songs was Coldplay inspired. I thought, fucking hell, they're finally fully going to have disappeared up their own arse. I expected it to be a disaster. But unfortunately, I don't think Idols are going to let me escape that easily, because for me, I agree with Sam. I think this is probably the best album they've released yet. I think maybe with the possible exception of Joy is an Act of Resistance, but I'm not sure. I need to go back and spend more time with that. But I think it's a better musical achievement than that album, this one is. I think one of the big criticisms of the band before was that they were one note. They just were there with slogans. And I think here they've come out with a really varied album that does differ both across the album. It differs. And it differs from the previous work. I've seen it described as a more soft rock approach, but I don't really think it's soft rock. I think it's still got a hard edge to it, but it's more soulful. It's more pared back at times. It's more personal. I think songs like Roy, A Gospel and Grace show a more intimate, intricate sound and brings a new angle to the band, and actually shows that you can sing, which even I didn't believe. Yeah. But then they have songs like Hall & Oates, which are still like Idols, fun, shouty songs. For me, though, I do particularly like the opening section of the album. I think Idea One has a really wonderful build. I think it's a really good way to kick off. And then it goes really well into Gift Horse, which is another great song. I really like Pop, Pop, Pop. I think the guitars are just really grimy and heavy on that. And yeah, when I first heard the song with LCD Sound System, I immediately slated it. But I have to say that's become one of my favourites as well. So I take that back. I do like the songs at the end. If there's one negative I have about the album, I do think that it tails off a little bit towards the end. But in general, yeah, I was a big fan and I didn't really want to be. But I'd already sold Ultra Mono and Crawler. They've already gone. So I could take the rest of my albums off Discogs. And I'm actually wearing an Idols t-shirt today. So things have changed. But I've been back and forth with this band so fucking much. They need to just make their mind up now whether I'm going to like them or not. But yeah, on to you, Matt.
Well, I haven't made my mind up about this album yet. I've listened to this album more than any other album this year. And I go backwards and forwards between where you guys are and feeling like I felt after listening to Crawler. Like, I like Crawler, but it's just fine. And it does feel like this thing of the band have got healthy and happier. And as a result, they don't have that intensity that they had before and the kind of vitality. And they're making something different, and that's okay. But I don't think it comes close to Brutalism or Joy as an album that I'm like have to listen to. And I think a lot of what you said is both said is spot on, and there's a lot of good things in here, a lot of really good things. I do think it's really interesting their choice of collaborators and who they're getting to kind of mix these sounds, with Kenny Beats and Nigel Godrich. It is pushing them in an interesting direction, and I am excited about it. And like you say, they can't keep doing the same thing. And I think they'd run that course. Ultramono is also my least favorite of their albums, but I still don't think it's as good. And I'm less excited about it. That said, I've spent 20, 30, 40, 50 hours listening to this album. So it's effective in one way, for sure. Yeah.
My prediction is it'll be back on the Album of the Year podcast as your Album of the Year, Matt, after all this anyway.
No chance. songs like Pop, Pop, Pop. Yeah, Pop, Pop, Pop was my favorite on this. And then Gift Horse, I think. And they're just, it's so different, but like still so them that it does make me excited that maybe in the future they'll really nail everything together. But I don't know. I'm still just not, when he's not angrily writing about something he's really annoyed about or generally pissed off about, I'm just not convinced by his writing, his lyrics.
Okay.
And so I still need something more from him for me to be really taken, I think.
Fair. I mean, but was he ever really annoyed about those things? That's the question we have to ask now, isn't it? Or was he doing it for likes? But anyway, not to go down that route. I'm actually quite impressed with myself that I didn't bring up Nigel Godrich as the longtime Radiohead collaborator. I didn't bang on about that. I could have, but I'll be talking about them for long enough later. So, okay, Matt, let's stick with you. Which album do you want to slag off of the remaining three?
Oh, everything.
Okay, go for it.
I have found that everything have just the opposite of Idols, who are mixing up. They've just stayed the same, and I enjoy it. But this album, just because they don't change, I just found it dull. It's also incredibly long, but I think it's interesting. Yeah, we'll talk more about Radiohead later. But I think juxtaposed next to it, it was an intro, because you always say that they sound like Radiohead, and I can see that clearer. I still disagree, but I can see that clearer, that they're trying for something and are heavily influenced by them. But they are aiming for that kind of poppier, lighter edge to it. But it just, I don't know. I know what I'll get from these guys. And it's just so adjacent to everything else I listen to. And it's all very clinical and effective. And so I just can't get that excited about it. To me, it's kind of like that rinse and repeat, and there's no messiness to it. It feels almost like you put into AI that you want this kind of band with this kind of band, and it comes out and it's this, because it just feels so smooth and perfect. And I think this is an unfair comparison, but after this you have Otis Redding, right? And you have those live recordings, and you can feel him, and you can't feel any emotion from these guys. And I think that's part of their shtick or whatever, and it's part of their thing. I also got really annoyed because there was one day that I was listening to it and Are You Happy came on, and I was really pissed off at the time, and it felt like it was a personal attack. So maybe this is all just me, like, getting that off my chest. But I just... It's a fine album. I want them to do something else.
Okay. Fair. Do you want to go, Sam? I know you're a big fan normally of the band, so...
I can go, yeah. What I agree with Matt about is that I think this is like the most unsurprising album on the playlist. It's exactly what I expected going in. But for me, still on the kind of good side of everything's discography, I think they're they know what they are, and they're very self-assured at this point. And even though I feel like I really liked the album, was it last year, the year before, 2 years ago? I really, really liked that one because it felt like they were trying some new things. And this kind of feels like a bit of a pivot back to the previous album, to that, Reanimator, which kind of feels a bit more of the same. But I think it's got everything that I like about the band in it. The nonsense of Jonathan Higgs' lyrics is all over this album. And like, it's not never more apparent than on like on Buddy Come Over or The End of the Contender, that song. Like, it's, but I've always felt like that's part of the chaos and part of their kind of like, the songs don't really make sense. And that's the point. There's no reason behind that. I saw the first time hearing most of this music, I went to an album release show. I went to the first one of the, they did like some of those shows before an album comes out to sell you the album. And I saw like 9 of these songs and the first time they performed any of them. And actually, I think it gave me a different perspective when the album came out, because I do think that some of them came alive, a lot more live than they do on the record. I think Canary specifically. But then also, I think the best song here is Enter the Mirror, which the live version of that that I saw performed had so much like emotion and so much like, so much to it that I hadn't heard before on most of the recent Everything stuff, that really hits hard. And I wonder if my perception of that song then on the album has changed, and if I'd just heard the album version, maybe it would be different. I think that's the highlight, and I've really, really liked this single called Reactor. I've had that in a playlist for since it came out last year, and that's been lodged in my head. I really like the instrumentation elsewhere. I think the Mad Stone is really good. I do think it kind of loses its way and a bit in the second half. I think it's a bit less consistent. And it's probably their least cohesive album in a long time, maybe even since the debut. But there's enough here that I really enjoy that, I'm going to see them again on Friday. So this week, I've obviously bought those tickets well before this album came out. But Yeah, I still really, really like them. I do think this is quite a big step down from the previous album. And I don't think they've reclaimed what made that one that was Mercury nominated, Fever Dream. I don't think they've got back to that, which really felt like they were trying something really different. But this is a band that knows what they're doing. They release an album so they can go on tour. And I think live, they make the most sense of anything. I still enjoyed it. I just think it's a bit bloated and, could have done with a few less songs.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, obviously you two both on different levels are Everything fans. It sounds like Matt hasn't been as much recently, but for me, I hadn't listened to an Everything album since we covered Fever Dream back in that first year or so of the podcast. So you'll remember back then that I did compare them to Radiohead. Matt's just mentioned that, but that they ended up trying to be Radiohead and sounding more like Muse for me. Well, I was harsh on them then. I did really like some of that album, and I did think it had some great songs on it. And I did say that at the time. And for me, anything that sounds a bit Radiohead influenced is usually a good thing. You know, they're my favourite band, so I don't mind that. The honest truth, I went away from that episode, and the reason I haven't really listened to them again is that I did just write them off as a bit of a wannabe band. And that only increased when I did find out that they're called Everything, because it's the opening line of Radiohead's Everything in Its Right Place, which I didn't know. But the most complimentary thing I'm going to say about Mountain Head is that it makes it clear I was wrong and they're not just a Radiohead wannabe band, because this doesn't sound like Radiohead. The problem for me, though, is when you take out that clear influence, you're just left with a bunch of songs that I just can't connect to. I just find them really, really ploddy and uninteresting on this album. I think Your Money, My Summer is one of the key examples of what I'm talking about. It just feels like someone going duh, 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 all the way through. It's just, it's so bland, there's no bite, there's nothing to hold on to. And I did feel like that throughout, really. I feel like this album can just wash over me without grabbing my attention. If I didn't have to listen to it for this, I might not have noticed it was on. The one time when it really did get my attention, though, was when a really terrible lyric would make me cringe. I think the key example is, oh, you are a woman and I am a man. We live in the city and we do what we can. It's just such a bad lyric. So yeah, I think Sam said when he picked it that he nearly didn't pick it because he kind of knew what my reaction would be, and you are right. But it's interesting to hear. I did wonder whether this was representative of them, a band, and why people think they're a good band. It doesn't sound like it's one of their best. But yeah, I liked what I did like of Fever Dream. This doesn't have a patch on that, I would say. So it certainly hasn't brought me back into the Everything party, I'm afraid. But yeah, that's where I landed. I think I'll stick with me and I'll just get talking about Serpent With Feet out of the way, because I don't have much to say. I may as well carry on being miserable now that I've been miserable. Actually, is this the same song 10 times, but occasionally with a rapper added? I felt the same about the last Serpent Feet album, Serpent With Feet. Everybody was raving about it. On the surface, it all sounds quite nice and smooth and pleasant and all of those words that mean the same thing, but it's devoid of any bite, any excitement, any surprise. It just kind of plods along. I'm using the word plod a lot today. And it doesn't, yeah, I could have just wrote the same review about this and everything. It doesn't grab my attention at all. Other than when it's weird for no reason, like when they try and sound really angry or loud halfway through Rum / Throwback. I just think everything here is really average. I think the beats are average. I think his voice is average. I think the lyrics are average. They even bring Mick Jenkins in, who I love. And even that song goes nowhere. Yeah, I found it really difficult to find a way into this. Both this and Everything were why I asked Sam what was hardest to connect to, because I couldn't connect to it at all. And I'm done. So yeah, did anyone like it?
I quite liked it, but I feel like I probably liked previous albums a bit more than you did. Okay. I've always enjoyed the voice. I think he has the real subtlety to how he sings, and it's so like emotive throughout. I think the last album was probably better for doing that, but I've always wanted something more and a bit more daring or exciting, and this isn't that. I wouldn't say it's not. It's enjoyable. I do enjoy the album. It just, I do kind of want something that's going to be like, okay, here we go. This is like, we're shaking it up. I think like the opener, it feels like a real juxtaposition of like intimacy, but then also like boldness. I think the lyrics on Deep End are so specific that I'm always interested hearing it, because it is so like direct to the point of like what a specific experience. And I really like some of the hooks elsewhere, like on Spades. That's just real like pure R&B like smoothness, and I really like how subtle the production is there. But I'm kind of less into the moments that sort of break the album up. There's a few like interlude type moments like Rum, Throwback, that just sort of take me out of it entirely. I'm feeling it throughout, and then there just seems to be something random that'll just not make sense with the context of the rest of the album. I think it leaves me wanting more, because I think the performance is so enjoyable and has so much more to give. Like, I don't think this is someone who we shouldn't expect more from. In that sense, I feel like there's glimpses of it across the album. We should be able to expect slightly more than we've got here, but I do enjoy it. I don't think it's a bad album by any stretch. Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair.
I think I agree with a lot of what Sam says. It is that album that you put on, and the entire time it's on, I was like, nice. And then it finishes and I'm not ready to reply it. And the next day I'm not excited to put it back on, but the entire time it's on, I'm like, it is a nice experience. I think like all the songs that sound good, but it does just feel like it's about to go somewhere. And then it's like, no, actually we won't do that. There's like a lot of moments in individual songs which I also really appreciate. Like there's like little guitar riffs and spades and ellipsis, which I really enjoyed and had this very like classy sound that were kind of grabbing me in. But it does just feel like he's got something and he could be great. And you see so many people in like similar spheres as him being so daring and bold and doing all these really interesting things with like this kind of R&B and mixing it with tons of other genres doing something that's just a bit more experimental. And it feels like he's playing it very, very safe. And I saw him support someone like 7-8 years ago and live with a band, his music seemed so much more vital. And it might be the same as the everything thing. It's once they're live and in a room, it adds so much more to their performance, and just getting it on tape is really hard. I don't know. But yeah, it says a lot when the biggest shock in the album or the biggest moment is the fact that Mick Jenkins comes on and it's just the change of voice. But it's shocking. And it, like, because he's not even like a particularly aggressively flowed rapper or anything like that.
Yeah.
It was just like, whoa, there's a real person here. It's not a ghost.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. You gave this so many backhanded compliments then, Matt. That was like, you sounded like you were being positive, but quite brutal. Whereas I was just brutal, so.
I've got to pretend to be nice, at least.
Yeah. Who wants to start with Annie X? You two fight it out.
I'll start.
Go for it.
I think this is the most immediately engaging album on the playlist. I think it's probably the most immediately punchy. But it's an album that wears its influence so proudly, which I think is both the best and the worst thing about the album. I think comparisons to like Pet Shop Boys, Depeche Mode, Human League, Blondie, like they're so obvious and they're so kind of clear on each of these songs. But that feels like it's a very important part of the identity of the album, in a sense, that it's like, it's this like knowingness that there's like 80s synth, there's like influences of like 90s house, and there's like noughties dance pop, and there's like these things all over the album. And I can see some people listening to it and going, why the hell would I listen to this? I could just listen to the original person. But I actually think Ali X manages to have to be this like central figure that makes the rest of it work around her. Like, I think it's so exciting as a record and such a good central figure that I actually got completely on board with it. I think a few highlights, I feel like Off With Her Tits is probably the most exciting and like enjoyable song on this whole playlist, maybe, but it's like such a transformative depiction of like gender and like, but just dressed up as this like massive pop banger. I think Galena, I don't know why I've written it like that. It might be my highlight though. I think that song has like real energy and I really like the way that it develops. I love Saddest Smile as well. It feels much more like darker synths and the bass line of that is really thrilling. But then I feel like maybe there's other places. That song, John and Jonathan, that song I don't feel like goes anywhere. Like it kind of, it just sort of doesn't have that end payoff that some of the other tracks do. But I feel like overall, while the album might not do much that's like original, I found it a really easy album to like get into and a really easy album to then connect lyrically and connect with as a kind of like piece of performance from Ali X. I think it's definitely exciting and it's definitely an enjoyable listen. Even though I can't see anyone saying that they were inspired by this album. It's not doing anything new, basically. But yeah, I really enjoyed it still. And it was one of my favourites on the playlist, I think.
Okay. Matt, do you want to go?
Yeah, this is one of my favourite albums of the year. I had so much fun with it. I think Sam is 100% right with pretty much everything he said. Like, those lists of influences are all genres and parts of icons and music that I already really enjoy, and then she fuses them together into something that is an amalgamation that totally works. I have a different list of bands that I've featured apart from Human League, but I was like things like Metronomy, which is a band I love. There's several moments which feel like that. There's Madonna as well, and Devo, and Ladytron. I think John and Jonathan feels very much like a Ladytron song. And I like the fact it doesn't go anywhere. It's kind of like keeps that like low tempo, just weird, we're kind of too cool for this song vibe to it. It reminds me a little bit of, so Carolyn Polachek from last year has that ability to fuse the genres, and like all the genres Alix is picking up much more natural bedfellows than maybe what Carolyn was doing, and so it's maybe a little bit less daring, but it's just as efficiently put together and maintaining her as the central figure. And her voice throughout also is just fantastic. Like the way she uses it to as this kind of like slowed, deep, almost talking, and then goes up to the like really high moments.
Yeah.
It's such an effective instrument. I think my favorite track was Black Eye. It just got stuck in my head. And it's the most a song has got stuck in my head for maybe years. And it was just going about my day, and I could hear it in there, and it just wouldn't leave, and it got annoying. But then I'd put it on, and I'd be like, actually, this song is great, and I'm excited to be listening to it. So I really enjoyed this. This was a fantastic, fantastic album. And it's one of the, I've only got 3 or 4 albums that are in my top list from the year, and it's definitely one of the best in them.
Okay. This could be coming back then. It might not be Idols. It might be this.
Yeah, okay. It's definitely better than Idols album.
I mean, I disagree with that last comment that you just made. but I'm probably as surprised as to say this as you will be to hear it, but I did quite enjoy this album, really. I think it felt like a mad mishmash of things. And I definitely got a really funny look off my partner Kirsten when she walked into the kitchen to hear me singing along to Off With Her Tits. That was an odd moment. But I think that I do think it's a bit of a silly album. It's definitely all over the place. Some of the songs are all over the place, let alone the album. But I think there's plenty to like. I think it's fun. I think it's amusing at times. I think that there are some really good lyrics. I think generally the tunes are quite involving. I think it does bring in a lot of different genres. I don't think it takes itself too seriously. And I do think there's some standout moments. You two have just listed nearly every band in existence. I didn't pick up on any of those influences, but largely because, to be honest, I don't listen to any of those bands that you mentioned, really.
Yeah, that makes it harder.
Yeah. I mean, the influences I picked up were particular to the song Galena, which was my favourite song. I think that's clearly got some Christine and the Queens influence and some Michael Jackson influence. Mm. And I think that they are not bad things, as long as she'd been influenced by Michael Jackson's music and not his life. and I think that in general, like the choruses on songs like Weird World, Girl With No Face and Off With Her Tits really do grab the attention. But yeah, I think on an album this inconsistent and this out of my normal comfort zone, there were going to be some moments that I thought were terrible. And Sam said one of them was the best, which was Saddest Smile. I did not like that. I thought Hardware Software was just mind-blowingly bad. Really, really, really bad, weird song. I did not like that one. But that was the only time of the album where I was really like, oh my God, what's this shit? So I thought generally it was a fun and engaging album, but to be realistic, it's probably a fun and engaging album that I thought I would never hear again, but maybe I will have to on the Album of the Year podcast if Matt doesn't get some sense by that. But generally, I did like it. I was impressed, and I think she's definitely very interesting. So not a bad one. Okay, that's the albums. So what did we think of the playlist? What did you think, Matt, as a whole?
Pretty good. There's a few moments where I was like, the things I didn't like, I was more disappointed than anything else. So, but I don't think there was a bad album. I think pretty much every album was good, at least.
Okay. I don't agree with that. I think there were two bad ones, but the rest were decent. So I'll leave it at that. What about you, Sam?
I kind of agree with Matt. I enjoyed pretty much everything here. Some less than others, some more than I expected to. There was nothing that... I feel like we can all agree that maybe the Otis Redding album is in its own league and shouldn't really be compared. But I enjoyed everything. And as a playlist, my God, it's better than some of the shit you make me listen to. So, I enjoyed it this month.
Okay. Very good. Well, I hope that positivity continues into the Why I Love section. So shall I just... I'll just go. How long have you got? Anyway. So after 74 episodes of Picky Bastards, it's finally time for me to talk about the best and most important band in the world, and that is obviously Radiohead. But I do have to say, though, that when I sat down to write my notes, I asked myself why the fuck I was doing this to me and to all of you. Like, I have so much that I could say about Radiohead. They've been in my life for decades. There's no way in the world I can talk about all the reasons why I love them right now, unless you are happy with a 7-hour podcast, which I don't think anyone is.
Nope.
I might just, once we finish recording, I might just sit in the room and just talk to myself about why I love Radiohead. But I decided to do something a little bit different. I haven't really done this with a Why I Love section before, but I thought maybe to keep it simple, I'll just go through the playlist I created, talk a bit about my reasons for choosing the songs and the order that I did, and just stop in here and there to tell you about what certain songs or certain things mean to me. But before I do that, I just wanted to start by saying that if any Radiohead fans listen to this, there are a million ways someone could do this playlist and this talk. Each Radiohead fan would be different. We all know that Radiohead have a very nerdy extreme element to their fan base, and rightly so. They're an extremely technical band. They're really clever musicians. They do a lot of interesting and original things. They play with music in ways that I don't even begin to understand, even though I know that what they do there is having an effect on why I love them so much. But I am not technical or clever when it comes to music, and when I speak to Radiohead fans and they start talking about time signatures and arpeggios, I just nod my head and say yeah, because really I don't fully understand a lot about those things. I mainly love Radiohead because of the emotional effect they have on me. And so that's largely what I will focus on. So please don't send any nerdy emails to Picky Bastards telling me off for not talking about those things. But anyway, to the playlist. I think one of the things that has always most impressed me about this band is how they just don't sit still. They just change and evolve. They're always daring. They're always trying new things. So I wanted to start the playlist with a song from nearly every era or album to give a sense of that growth. I very nearly started the playlist with Creep so that I could include Pablo Honey as well, but the playlist was already quite long, and let's be honest, you've all heard Creep. You know what it sounds like. Just imagine Creep for a couple of seconds and imagine it at the start of the playlist. So I opened with a run of songs including Talk Show Host, No Surprises, Idiotech, Pyramid Song, They're There, Weird Fishes, Lotus Flower, and Present Tense. So that's one. Talk Show Host technically isn't on the Bends, but it was the same era as the Bends. The rest are from the following albums in that order. So I think it's hard to really show how daring and changeable this band is on a playlist, but that switch between No Surprises and Idiotech should demonstrate how drastic the change was between OK Computer and Kid A. It was considered one of the biggest switches in music history, and I'm perfectly happy now to admit that I was one of the fans who was totally turned off by the new sound at first. I queued for Kid A. I put Kid A on, and I didn't listen to it again for months, and I was really angry. They had changed, but now I see it as one of the many examples of how ahead of their time and influential this band has been and just how changeable they are. I think it's really impressive that listening to a playlist like this, you can see how they switch between rock, electronica, dance, ballads, and even a bossa nova tone on Present Tense, but they keep that core identity throughout. We talked a bit about that with Bjork last time out, and I think Radiohead definitely have that. So that's why I opened with those songs. But before I move on, I just want to talk a little bit more about No Surprises in a bit more detail. So I'm not going to sit here and say that No Surprises is their best song. It probably isn't, but it is the one that means the most to me. I think it's such a clever, thoughtful way of talking about living with anxiety. And in my teenage years, that song was permanently in my ears and was like a real sort of, it really helped me on many occasions. I didn't get to see this band live until 2016, which is insane. I'm not going to go into the long list of details of why that never happened. But when they played No Surprises at Camden Roundhouse, I was in floods of tears. It was, for me, the most amazing moment of any gig I've been to on a personal level. But yeah, so following on from those opening songs, I kind of wanted to bust a bit of a myth about Radiohead. So the next songs I chose were Bangers and Mash, The National Anthem, and Jigsaw Fall Into Place in the Daily Mail. I think for me, that's just like a bit of a riposte to the people who always tell me that Radiohead are miserable whenever I say they're my favourite band. I think they can be miserable, and they are amazing at being miserable, and some of their miserable songs are my favourites. But another reason I love them is because they're one of the very few bands that actually makes me want to dance and throw myself around and makes me want to move. I mean, if you can't dance to Jigsaw's Falling Into Place, you shouldn't be allowed out of the house. And then Daily Mail fits into that category because it's a fun song. It shows their fun side. It shows their sort of inventive, weird side. But it also fits with the following two songs on the playlist, Gagging Order and Fog. I included these three songs and Talk Show Host at the start because I've also always been blown away with the strength of Radiohead's B-sides. I had, in fact, been considering doing a full playlist of B-sides just to be like, look at all these songs you haven't heard that are amazing as well. But I didn't want to be that pretentious. But I do think the strength of the songs that don't even make their albums shows another reason why I love them. I think they're just relentlessly creative. They never stop. And if you think about outside of Radiohead, and I've still got Tom York, Why I Loves to Come, The Smile, Why I Loves to Come. I won't do that to you. But you could. They just never stop. And especially Johnny and Tom, they never stop making music. And when you're a fan, that's an absolute joy. I actually saw The Smile live last week. And while no, it's not Radiohead, to see these geniuses still ripping up on stage is a privilege. Like, they're still smashing out amazing performances. One of the songs they played that night, Teleharmonic, was one of the best live performances I've seen in a decade. And then to be honest, I just finished the playlist with four undeniable classics. So I think Separator is probably the most joyful, uplifting moment in their catalogue. Reckon is just beautiful. I think Street Spirit was the early song on the bends that really gave a hint to like how creative and intricate this band was going to become. Like, it wasn't just, a lot of the album was just rock, that there was something else about Street Spirit. And I just think Exit Music is just them at their brutal best. If someone says they're miserable, Exit Music would be proof of that, and I couldn't argue with that. But then I think those four songs also demonstrate another thing I really love about the band. I think so many of the songs, particularly these four, have a moment where the song just becomes transcendent, where everything changes. Those moments really elevate this band, I think. And I think in Exit Music, it's when the heavy drums kick in. In Separator, it's the key change, the additional instrumentation, and the first time he sings, If You Think This Is Over, Then You're Wrong. It's just really a beautiful moment. So as I said at the start, there's so much more I could say about this band and my life with them and what they've meant to me. I could tell you the story about how I had tickets for them 5 or 6 times before I eventually got to see them, or how I was at the front row of their Glastonbury 97 set but didn't know who they were at the time, so went off to see some Shite instead. I could talk about the many drunken nights singing with my friends, but I just want to end by talking about how influential they are, because I think it's incredibly important when thinking about Radiohead. It's absolutely guaranteed that everybody listening to this loves some music that wouldn't sound how it does if it wasn't for Radiohead. I think you think about bands like Coldplay, who, you know, their early stuff was so influenced by Radiohead. I mentioned earlier, everything, so influenced by them that they name themselves after their lyrics, but it just runs so much deeper than that. I think one of the great things about doing this podcast and website with you all is that I've been able to see the influence that radio has had even more widely. Like, I never would have listened to people like Leanne LaHavis, Niffle Yanya, but listen to them, you can see how influential In Rainbows has been. So it's not even the early stuff, just the early stuff of Radiohead that's influenced so much rock music. In Rainbows is so influential to so much music that's coming out now. Anna B. Savage, for example, when I spoke to her, she talked about the ways that you know, Radiohead's early stuff influenced some of her first album, In Rainbows influenced some of the stuff in the second album. So they just continue to be influential, and they've had this indelible mark on music that very few bands or artists do. And they've been a really central band to me in my life. They're the band that I always come back to. And yeah, that's another reason why I love them. But I think I did quite well to keep my notes. So to that length, I'm not going to bang on. There is a lot more I could say, but yeah, let's go to you two. And I think for once I'm going to, let's just get the negativity out of the way and go to Sam.
How dare you?
But Sam, did anything convince you? I mean, you have to start there, but...
The thing is, like, I don't feel like you could have done anything in the playlist to like convert me into being a Radiohead fan, like an actual fan who's like going to go buy the albums or anything.
Yeah, I would never.
I was kind of hoping to have like some sort of eureka moment. But my feelings are kind of the same. I liked what I liked. I didn't like what I didn't like. But first off, I do get like, and I get the importance of them as a band, but then it's in musical terms that I feel like they're the most important, because the song construction and the experimentation is so bold within even singular songs. And that, like you said, that's heard in so much of the music that I love now. And the artists that would have influenced them in the first place, then it's that the kind of like cascading of influence down.
Yeah.
They're such an important piece of that. The thing for me is that there's just something, there's always something that just feels self-indulgent to me in nearly every song on this playlist that just stops me from like fully engaging. I think like a song like Idiotech, I really enjoy the production on that song. Kid A has always felt like this like side by side, like brother and sister to Bjork's Homogenic. Like they're about the same era, very similar in kind of, they're clearly working together as well at certain points on that, on Bjork's album. And then like, it's a similar thing that they're kind of doing. But like that song specifically, it has so much going for it, and then it just sort of seems to go on and then not end and just repeat itself. And it just does that a bit too much for me to fully engage. There is so much repetition in these songs, and that's something you mention so much on this podcast, Fran, that you hate repetition in all of these albums. And I'm like, they're getting it from Radiohead. What are you talking about? Like, I think
I mean, it depends what you're repeating, right? If you're repeating stuff that I like, I don't mind. If you're repeating bollocks,
I think the key thing for me has always been Tom York's performance, and that has been the deal breaker for me a lot of the time, because I do find that the music is so diverse and experimental and really pushes itself. And I've always found his voice to be very one note and very kind of consistently the same throughout. And this has actually given me more of that sense, like from the start to the end of their career. And it's kind of
shaking my head vigorously.
I know that there's going to be some fans that like, some music fans are like, he is the greatest ever, no one comes close as the lead singer. And that's the bit I really struggle with, because I just don't see it. I just don't hear it. I don't get it. I hate that I've written down one specific song that I really don't like, that I already knew I didn't like. And then you've told a really, really lovely, really emotional story about it. But
don't worry.
I find those surprises so dull, so painfully dull, that I just dreaded that coming on every time, because that's the song that I knew.
At least you got it out of the
way
early. It was only the second song, so
at least you got it out of the songs that I really did like and that I do like of theirs, of the like big hit singles, like the singles. I think there is really good. I think that's really interesting. I really like the way that song builds. To me, like Weird Fishes feels like their definitive song, the ultimate Radiohead single track in a lot of ways. It's just super interesting musically.
I agree with that.
And Thom Yorke just kind of fits that. I feel like that suits him the most. I've always enjoyed Kid A and In Rainbows more than anything else. I've always found that the previous stuff a little kind of hard slog to get through. And then everything since has felt very indulgent and very kind of like, look at how amazing we are at making this music. But those central moments of their career, I fully get. And like, if I was going to listen to any of their albums, it would be either of those ones. I think that's where it makes the most sense to me. But yeah, I've tried to be positive there. I don't think I have been.
I wasn't expecting anything more. But I mean, the one thing I have to come back on is the one note voice. Like, and I think something that particularly stands out to me when you're saying that is like you did the Bjork playlist last time, and that's where I am with her. I can't quite get that because her voice is so incredibly one note.
Wild, like that's.
But
wild
Thom Yorke's voice is not one note in any way.
His voice isn't the instrument of the music. That's the bit I struggle with. Is that I don't feel like the music wouldn't work if he wasn't singing. Whereas that's what I'm getting from. But that's just my feeling.
Honestly. Yeah, no, and I think it's one of those voices that people do have for some reason that I don't understand. I can understand it when you talk about like Matt from The National. I can understand people not liking his voice, but Thom Yorke's voice is, to me, it's the best thing in music, and I don't understand.
That's just utterly wild. Like a wild thing to think.
Just to give a quick sense of how much I love Thom Yorke, about 2 weeks ago, I was sat in the kitchen at the table after I'd finished tidying up at night, and Kirsten walked into the kitchen and actually said to me, "Are you thinking about Thom Yorke again?" Because I was just staring out the window thinking. And the problem is, I was.
You were.
I was just sat there thinking about Thom Yorke. So, yeah, she wasn't wrong.
What would happen if you met him?
Oh, I don't, man. I was in the same. Honestly, the Smile gig last week was at the Apollo, and usually, obviously, Radiohead gigs were at the big venues. The Apollo, yeah. I was stood about 30 feet from him, and I just stared and smiled for an hour and a half, and I just couldn't believe I was that close to him. So I don't know what would happen if I met him. I don't know. But anyway, let's move on from that weird admission to Matt.
Well, I love Radiohead. This is a great playlist. I knew every song beforehand, and I still
did you know
them
all of
afterwards.
Them. I wondered if any of the because I didn't know quite how much you would know of like the more B-sidey things, but you knew all of them as well.
I listen like whenever specifically I don't delve into his solo stuff as much, but whenever there's this a Radiohead thing, I listen to pretty much everything that comes out. My replay, I don't replay it as much as I used to, and I generally stick to the older albums if I do.
But
I think a lot of what you said is that they have outlasted and out-innovated everyone else who could be considered contemporary. Like, the past 30 years, they are the band. And they are the ones that, without a doubt, will be being played 60 years from now. There will be the classic album. What's your favorite album?
In Rainbows.
Cool. Yeah.
In Rainbows is my favorite.
I think it is the one. It's also my favorite. I think that will be the classic. I think I remember when this album, In Rainbows, also, I went traveling when I was 18. I did the whole gap year thing. And so I was 3 months by myself for the first time. And I was like this little anxious kid. And I had a MP3 player with 50 songs on, and 10 of those were In Rainbows. And so it beyond the fact that it's an amazing album, it always makes me think of that time as well. Going on buses where I didn't speak the language and just was by myself listening to that for hours on end.
Nice. Fun.
It was,
I wish I could do that today.
Yeah, it was great. But yeah, just every track's great. There is one of my favorites as well. I just like Sam says, it's so interesting, the drums. And I also have a distinct memory of seeing that on, like, it's one of those Jules Holland moments of, I have like 5 or 6 moments where I would watch Jules Holland, and that like really a song really grabbed me or a performance really grabbed me, and that's one of them. Because it's just so interesting. It was felt so different at the time and really opened my eyes a little bit. But yeah, I think for this playthrough, I got really obsessed with the ending of Weird Fishes. Like, I love it. Like, it's like the like Sam was saying, that it's the most Radiohead song, but for some reason I got really obsessed with the way it just ends and the cymbal hits, and it's just like,
Oh, you mean right at the end? I thought you meant kind of
right, literally that, literally that final moment. I got just, I was so into that. And but I think that's just like a symptom of them. There's so much intricacy and detail everywhere. Yeah, that there's cool shit happening over every single song. Like, some of the songs are, I think people would be super happy if they had some of these little nuggets, just one of them in one of their songs, in one of their albums. And every single song is like full of them. So they're really good. And I get what Sam's saying. It is indulgent.
And Tom York, no argument with that point. Yeah.
Tom York's voice isn't the best part about them. Probably for me, the least interesting part about them, but it's still great.
Shake mad at you as in the end. As well. I mean, I think Tom York adds to it. When you watch Radiohead live on stage, like, Tom York isn't just his voice; it's like his performance and the way he is on stage is fucking phenomenal. Like, I've never watched the way he dances is just so ridiculous, but it's just so captivating. But yeah, I mean, the point with the little things all over the songs, I always just think about like radio, like really nerdy Radiohead fans talk about on Weird Fishes, the way Ed O'Brien, his backing vocal. He's just making a noise, really, but it sounds like he's saying Ed, which is his name. And everyone's convinced that just throughout Weird Fishes, and you won't be able to hear it, listen to it without hearing it now. You've just got Ed O'Brien singing his name on repeat in the background. So.
Thanks.
But yeah. Okay. Was that everything, Matt?
Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, that was largely positive. I'm happy with that. I'm going to make Sam go and watch Tom York on stage at some point. And
let's never mention them again.
Well, yeah, I might genuinely end up, depends how long we do this podcast for and whether I get desperate, but there could be a Tom York Why I Love down the road. I'll leave it for at least 75 more episodes, so yeah. Okay, well, on to the next then. So yeah, thank you for listening. We will be back with another episode in around a month, for which Matt is going to be hosting and doing the Why I Love. So Matt, why don't you tell us what your classic and Why I Love is going to be?
Yeah, the classic's going to be Tom Waits with Rain Dogs, and the Why I Love is going to be the Gil Scott-Heron and Jamie XX album We're New Here.
Nice. What have you picked, Sam?
I've picked Real Power by Gossip and Tiger's Blood by Waxahachie.
Nice. And I have Bright Future by Adrian Lenker and The Collective by Kim Gordon. So yeah, quite excited for this one. Interesting list. Yeah, listeners, go and check us out on pickybees.com. That is our website, where it's not just links to the podcast. We also do a lot of reviews and articles. I say we do a lot. It's been a quiet period, but you can go back. You can find stuff from last year, and we will pick up again soon, I'm sure. And also follow us on Twitter @pickybastards. And I believe Sam might have set up some other social media.
Yeah.
Is it worth mentioning them yet, Sam?
It is worth mentioning.
Okay. We are using them.
Yeah. We're on Instagram as The Picky Bastards, so that's a good one to follow if you want to.
Not the TikTok.
We are on TikTok as well. If you want to follow us, it is also The Picky Bastards.
Okay, find us, and you can all write in and tell me what the Instagram and the TikTok look like, because I will never see them. but I welcome your feedback.
One day, Fenn will show you.
Yeah, maybe that's true. Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, thanks for listening, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.